Welcome to the May 16th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating today and remind you to please mute your screens or and any electronic devices that you may have with you today if you are unmuted on your screen. Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session beginning this morning at 10 a.m. in the afternoon session beginning at 1 p.m. We will be having an executive session at the completion of that. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand electronically or physically like this. That you would wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record, and you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have four commissioners present: Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Walquist. I'll get that, Eric.
No worries. And
Lisa Sanders, Clerk, Administrative Assistant. Today, would you please join Heather Poltz in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and our safety minute?
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Right, Lisa, if you could pull up my presentation. Had a little too much fun putting some slides together for you guys this morning. Will I be able to see that here on Teams?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that, Lisa.
We're working on it. We're working on it. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Well, I guess I can introduce myself. My name is Heather Poltz. I'm the Customer Utilities Administrative Assistant. A lot of you probably don't recognize me. I started just before the pandemic hit, so nice to see you all as well. All righty. So the name of my presentation for the Safety Minute today is Sharing the Road with Our Animal Friends. And next slide, please. So why does this matter? I think this aligns with a couple of our district values here. One of them, of course, being safety. Minimizing road collisions of any kind creates a safer environment for everyone. Secondly, this also falls under the stewardship value. I believe we have a duty to try and prevent injury to animals who are not as street savvy as us. They're a crucial part of our ecosystem and one of the reasons that make our county exceptional. Next slide, please. Next, please.
Working on it. She's running back and forth between admitting people to the meeting and the other computer that allows her to change the screen.
I thought this setup would be easier. Maybe I should have showed up in person.
No, that's fine.
Alrighty, so here are just a few photos of animals I've encountered on the road. Deer, marmots, cats and dogs. I cheated and put in photos of my own. They're not outside because they're not allowed, but there they are. wild turkey, quail, cows. I've also seen eagles, skunks, horses. I've seen a guy that had a couple horses pulling a wagon. I even saw a great horned owl sitting in the road at night a couple months ago. That was very unexpected. Actually, he looked like a cat from a distance because of his little ear tufts. It was, kind of disconcerting, actually. Next slide, please. So here are some of the risk factors regarding animals on the road. Next, please. I put slide transitions in. Sorry, Lisa.
Okay.
So there's more animals out and about because it's warm out. There's more food sources for them. There's also more people on the road because the roads are clear, the weather's nice, more vacations, road trips, weekend trips to the hardware store. There's also more distractions. There's a lot more to look at. Wildflowers are blooming, more RVs and whatnot on the road. People might be driving with more passengers, and passengers can be distracting. Next, please. Regarding visibility, especially this time of year, I've noticed sun coming and going into work can be dangerous if you're not prepared. In contrast to that, no sun, meaning driving at night. Of course, this is something that can take place any time of year, but just drawing attention to the fact that driving at night is riskier. You can't see as far as quickly, so you have less reaction time. And lastly on this one, trees and shrubs are growing taller and denser and can obstruct your view while driving. Next, please. Oh, sorry, you already have it there. Vehicle condition. If you have balding tires or less effective brakes, it can make it harder to avoid creatures on the road. Next, please. And here are some mitigations to all the factors that I just listed. Knowing when animals are coming out of our hibernation, for instance, mating season, their migration patterns, this can help you be on the lookout for animals. And my second point here, it's just extremely easy to let your guard down during drives you've done countless times before. Animals are unpredictable, so trying to stay alert and driving defensively, just assume they're not going to make decisions that are in their best interest. More often than not, they'll run back in the road, and it's just animals for you. Next. Regarding visibility, having readily available sunglasses, I know a lot of vehicles these days have a little sunglasses holder right within reach of the driver's seat. Turning on your fog lights and brights at night when appropriate. You don't want to blind other people. And also just keeping greenery in your roads trimmed. Just try to keep the path of visibility open for drivers. And lastly on that, just take your time. If you can't see well, driving slower is going to reduce your chance of accidentally hurting an animal. Next. So there's a couple different mitigations we can take for our vehicles. One of them, you may have heard of, it's called the penny test. It's how you can check the tread depth of your tires. You just hold a penny upside down, and if Abe Lincoln's head is fully exposed when you put it in the tread of your tires, it's time to change your tires. And secondly, brake pads. This one is variable. You might want to check your owner's manual. Depending on what kind of driving you're doing, where you're driving, highway versus in town, you want to replace your brake pads every 25,000 to 60,000 miles, just about, and rotors less frequently, about every 70,000 miles or so. Next, please. And I just wanted to end my presentation here with just don't take any actions that will put you or other drivers at risk. Just use good judgment. And lastly, despite our best efforts, we won't always be able to avoid animals on the road. It's just kind of a fact of life, and it's sad, but there's not much we can do about it in some situations. So if you hit an animal and the animal itself is posing a risk to other drivers, call 911. Also, kind of call 911 if you or anyone else is injured, or you might need a police report to support an insurance claim. And just a note on this last photo here, I didn't want to put this in the mitigation slide because it's kind of extra, but this is actually a picture of my home, and I put a marmot crossing sign out. We have so many marmots that cross the road here, and sadly, some of them do get hit. But having that sign there, it definitely helps, especially people who like to drive up and down the road that are new, to just kind of be on the lookout for more animals. Thank you, and safe driving. And that's it for me.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
So up here in Leavenworth, Wednesdays are our dangerous days. That's the day of trash collection, and the bears come down the road, and we've had some close calls with neighbors and bears on the road. So anyway, thank you, Heather. Appreciate that.
Of course.
Have
thank you.
Have a great day.
You as well.
Okay. Let's move to item number two, approval of the agenda. Commissioners, resolution 15 and 16 have been recommended by staff to be moved to the consent agenda. For our public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon the request of any commission member. So at this point, do I hear any request for such or any additions to the agenda, including 15 and 16, to go to the consent? So it looks like I see no comments, so agenda stands. All right. Kirk, let's go to our CPO winner recognition.
Good morning, commissioners. It's a privilege to honor Michelle Van Bogart this morning. She's with us here in the boardroom, and I'll slide my laptop over with my camera here shortly so you can see her. Before I do that, I just wanted to share Michelle's nomination for the board. Michelle was nominated out of a number of employees for all the things that she's done with the restructuring and the transformation in IT. She was given a couple of the more challenging tasks in restructuring. One of them was to look at the service desk process, and the second one was to actually create a technology project management office, which is a new division within IT. Upon taking on the service desk challenge, Michelle lost a couple of key players that actually moved into IT operations, and so she had a double challenge there. And then after that, taking on the technology project management office, she had to start from scratch, and that she actually had to build from the ground floor in terms of creating job descriptions, positions, roles and responsibilities, expectations, and we're in the process of actually staffing that division as we speak. But I wanted to say, I think the thing that stands out the most for Michelle is she is not afraid to take on big challenges, and she does it with a great attitude and very cooperative in nature in terms of what she does. So I'm just really pleased this morning to recognize her with the April Cycle of Personal Ownership Award. Any questions or comments from board members?
Michelle, would you like to share anything with us today? You don't have to, but we would love to hear from you if you're...
Sure. I have a couple thoughts to share. So I'm very honored, but at the same time humbled by being nominated and selected for this award. Based on my experience, I mostly come from commercial space, big company, tech. So this has been a big change for me career-wise, but it's been fun to learn something new and different. And based on my experience and belief that I can figure out anything, I developed a vision for our IT service desk and our project management office. And, this award has just been a great reflection point on that vision and how far we've come towards achieving it. And so I'm just really grateful that management had faith in me and my team trust me and supported my ideas and really jumped in and helped out. So that's been great. I really owe a lot to them. My personal mission statement I have for myself is just to be a dealer of hope and inspiration and personal growth, for not only my work family, but my home family and my friends. I really care about people, and I have passion for connecting with people. I'm a doer at heart. That's really what I have built my career on. And I just felt like becoming a manager was a calling in my time to kind of give back and help others be doers and achieve their goals. So, just being a mentor there all the people who have believed in me throughout my career, this is just another way for me to share all that. On a personal note for me, similar to Heather, I have not been here very long. I started shortly before the pandemic. My husband and I uprooted and moved our family here about 3 years ago from the West Side. We came here looking to live a lower stress life, have more purpose and meaning. We did not have much of a plan. We left behind stable careers. We left behind our family and really the place where we grew up. but we felt we could live somewhere and have a greater impact on our community. And so, again, this has just been another moment where we've reflected on, you know, our goal and our vision just 3 years ago is happening. And so this award has been great for that as well.
Great. Michelle, I loved your story. Loved the personal vision because it aligns so well with the mission of the PUD, enhancing the quality of life in having that impact by individual people like you is so important and so crucial for us. So thank you very much. And really, you know, recognition is one of those two-sided coins. You know, nobody really wants to have that type of recognition. And yet, on the other hand, it's nice to know that an organization does recognize the efforts of individuals. And so on one hand, you're kind of embarrassed to have that recognition. On the other hand, it's greatly appreciated, I'm sure. So congratulations with your recognition, with all of your hard work and dedication.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, we'll let you off the hook.
All right. See you around.
Thank you.
Nice job. Thank you.
All right. Kirk, I'm just going to turn this over to you for 4 through 7. So go ahead and take it away.
Thank you. Item number 4 on the agenda is an update from Ron Slabaugh, who's with us in the boardroom, regarding the Peshaston Water District acquisition process that we're going through. So, Ron?
Thank you, Kirk. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good to see you, even virtually. Just have a brief update presentation here for you today. Next slide, please, Lisa.
There we go.
Excellent.
Bear with us here a second. We're getting it loaded up on the screen.
There you go.
Yeah.
Is it on now?
Yep,
it's there.
Why we're here, just 3 items, is informational, not asking for any action today. Overall progress update on the Peshaston Water District acquisition and what we have, what we're thinking about for next steps. Next slide. Well, some of the considerations and priorities that we have, just a reminder that the PUD is responding to the Peshaston Water District's request. I think they made that back towards the end of 2016. We've been working off and on and began last year. We identified this as a priority. It's on the district's performance plan, and working closely with some internal team members this year to do our best to make this happen. The Peshaston Water District leadership is committed. In 2019, there were 3 public meetings. I attended each of those, and there were 2 virtual meetings last year. Overall, somewhat overwhelming support from the public for this effort. We operate the wastewater system within the same service territory there in Peshaston. And because of that, there would be some benefit of a single utility provider for water and wastewater services. We have a similar situation in Dryden, for example, and we're able to utilize the wastewater staff to do some of the basic checks on the water system and such, so they don't have to send somebody up from the water department specifically for those efforts. Next slide. As part of this, we are in the process of performing all necessary due diligence, identifying risks and considerations for this acquisition. The Peshaston Water District customers, in the spirit of having something that's easy to explain, understand, and administer ultimately when they're water customers, we'd want to implement our regular in-place PUD rates, fees, charges, and policies instead of having something that's different. Just move to that postage stamp approach like we did with our systems here, I believe, over 10 years ago. To cover some of the capital improvements that are identified, we would implement a rate adder just to ensure financial stability, sustainability for that system. As I mentioned previously, we anticipate completion by the end of this year. These are the various internal teams that we've identified and tasks that we're working on. I won't necessarily go over all of these. There's about a dozen of them. But you can see real estate, for example, just making sure that we have land rights for all the assets. Water rights is a key topic that comes up from time to time. Over to the other, to the right-hand column, you know, customer accounting, meter reading, billing is something that we're certainly working on. And, of course, finalizing that financial analysis. Next slide. And here we are for next steps going forward. We are finalizing the financial analysis, putting together a methodology for what that rate adder could look like for the various capital improvements that have been identified. Completing our due diligence, of course, to identify risks. We will be working on a purchase and sale agreement and various closing documentation. Think of it as buying a house. It's just a little bit more complex. There's a little bit more to it, but ultimately purchase and sale, due diligence, and closing. We will come back to the board, currently looking at September for an update on our progress on all these activities. At that time, we'll have the financial analysis completed, that rate adder methodology, and following an update to this board, we would like to coordinate with the Peshawson Water District Board one last time to confirm community support for this acquisition. And with that, do we have any questions or comments?
Commissioners, any other questions for Ron? Ron, this has been a huge project. It's taken several years. You're still not finished, and I just want to let you know how much I appreciate the effort that you and staff are putting into making this happen. It's just a huge, huge effort. So I appreciate the update.
Okay, well, I appreciate the kind words, and I'll pass that along to staff.
I would just add to along the lines of the effort, just one of the things we recognized when we acquired the Cashmere Electric System was just all the things that Ron had on the one slide that go along with that, particularly the property side of things can be a large task in making sure that we have all the records and everything that goes along with that, and sometimes even some adjustments need to be made. When we recognize the records might not be some, you know, what they should be. So it's a large team effort that Ron's leading, certainly here at the district. With that, ready to move to item number five? Oh, we got a question.
One more comment, please. What I really like about this is a continued commitment to people having safe drinking water and adequate supplies within Chelan County. And it's not daily, but it certainly is weekly or monthly across the United States, where we have citizen after citizen after citizen who are not subjected to clean water and good and adequate flows. And for us to be able to take this step forward and be able to complete it by the end of the year, it's just one more piece of our county that will have that first-class status and opportunity. And it's a thing of pride, and I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Dennis. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay, the next item on our agenda item number five, is our quarterly energy resources update with Sean Smith and Janet Jaspers.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources. Today is an update only. I don't know, are we still working on getting it up?
Nope. Yeah, we're working on it, Sean.
Okay. There we go. Next slide. So this is an update only. No action is required from the board. In the appendix, you'll find additional detailed information not covered today. Also, this is by resolution. We are required to come to the board quarterly. Why we're here, we're going to talk about the 2022 net revenue forecast update, Western power markets, and then go through operations and planning, the portfolio overview, and the pricing update. So if I go to the next slide, key points here is our 2022 net wholesale revenue forecast is up $5 million, $69 million now. After adding in other energy-related revenue, we've got $124 million for the year, which is $16 million higher than budget. We're going to talk about the resource adequacy program. Western Resource Adequacy Program continues to advance on schedule, and then also Western market updates. Both the California ISO, EDAM initiative, and the SPP Markets Plus. Both are continuing at a pretty good pace here, so we'll get more into detail later on here. Next slide. We've decided on this new slide and wanted some feedback from you. This provides our overall electric revenue forecast picture, not just the wholesale piece. And you'll see the different components there and out to 2030. We also have that slight green line that shows the last time we were here in the budgeted amount. So you'll see the slight budget amount going upwards. So wanted to get feedback here. If you like it, you'll see revenue steady growth with slight adjustments to categories as we go out to 2030. Wondered if you had any input here, let us know now or after the presentation.
I like it, but I love graphs. That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So the next slide goes a little more in depth here. And if you look up at the top line, as opposed to the last time we were here, our forecast is we're about $5 million up on energy sales. You've seen a very strong market as we've hit the ice curve for the Mid-Sea with rising gas prices, which you'll see later on, and just overall supply and demand. Further on, our retained surplus shows the $8 million that was booked, and then down below, other energy-related subtotal, again, with those high energy prices, were $8.7 million above our original forecast. So for the year, we're currently forecasting a $60 million better than budget. There's been some talk. Would the board still like to see this in the front section, or is this too detailed and we move it to the appendix so you can refer to that if needed? Just wanted to get your input there on that one.
Sean, it's Gary. I'd certainly like to continue to see it.
Sure.
And you mentioned gas prices, too. If you could include, or perhaps it's later in the slides, where gas prices have been as well. That'd be great. I see Jan nodding. That's probably part of her presentation.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Anne, did you have your hand up?
Well, I did, but I was going to say I like having it. Appendix is fine with me, but if Gary wants it up front, I'm totally good with that, too.
Okay.
Thanks for...
No problem. So next slide. Just wanted our sales and commitments are within. Our sales and commitments were within hedging limits, which is shown by the red line. So nothing has changed there. And then if I go to the next slide, our fixed price slice contracts, there's discussions obviously going on, but nothing that has been inked yet, so these numbers have stayed the same since our last update. Now, if we go to the next slide. So,
Hi. Yeah, so, Sean, could you just go back? I just want to spend just to that one right there. Yeah, thanks. Yep. I just want to look at it a little more.
Sure.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah,
sure.
I can come back to it and look at it again later, but I just wanted to look at it carefully in case
sure.
you had questions. Because I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
I think that's a really good slide.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, and thanks for spending a little more time on it.
If we go to the next slide, we talked. So now we're into the changes in the Western power markets. The resource adequacy program. Actually, it starts today. We're finalizing the resource adequacy tariff. I'll be going down to Portland after this presentation, and there'll be a page turn of the tariff over the next 3 days. And then after that is complete, incorporating all the changes, we will plan to file at FERC this summer that tariff. Currently, the program looks to go binding in 2024. So everything so far is so good. We'll provide updates quarterly there. On short-term markets, which is day-ahead and real-time markets, we've got a competition going on. I've discussed it before, but we have the California ISO extended day-ahead market, which they recently, the end of April, issued a straw proposal, and they have a very aggressive timeline of trying to go live by 2024. Also, in parallel is the SPP Markets Plus initiative. So same thing, they want a day ahead in real-time market. They are expected to what's called a draft service offering, similar to a straw proposal, just companies using different names, and they expect that to have a release of September of this year. And then they also have an interim phase before they go live, which is called the commitment to investigate for members in the first quarter of 2023. So you'll see these are on a little different timing, and that's been getting some news lately in the Pacific Northwest. So if I go, and the Desert Southwest. So if I go to the next page, us along with 15 other Western utilities, we issued a letter of intent, and it's been in Clearing Up and a few other publications, that we would, as a whole, would like to review both EDAM and Markets Plus before a path forward is chosen. Public Power Council also issued a similar letter last week themselves, which was almost the same, basically saying, let's not choose the one that makes it to the market first, but what is the best for all the entities or each individual entity. Obviously, we have our customer owners that we would need to analyze this for and choose the best path forward or none. You can pick one or the other, or you don't have to go into it. To the markets, but keeping an eye on those. There's been lots of starts and stops in the markets outside of California, but this seems to have quite a bit of momentum, especially with two competitors against one another. The state carbon policies, CETA rulemaking efforts are expected to be wrapped up by the end of the summer. They proceed, there's some back and forth between the environmental groups and the utilities, but we're progressing there. And the Cap and Invest program, it has to start in 2023, so that is quite a sprint to get to the end so we can actually have a live program beginning in 2023, which we're required to do. So a lot of work's being done there. If I go to the next slide, I will pass this off to Janet now and talk about gas prices.
Okay, thanks, John, and good morning, Commissioners. Janet Jaspers, Energy Planning and Trading Director. And so, yeah, natural gas is a big indicator right now in our wholesale electric prices. And this chart, which is slide 10, shows a number of different natural gas trading hubs. And so for closest to us is Sumas, which is the kind of real red line. You can see that all of these hubs have been increasing over the years. Typically, when we show other charts, it's Henry Hub, which is kind of the basis, the main hub that trades. You can see that PG&E City Gate Hub, which is yellow, just is about $2 higher than some of the other hubs. And it's really just kind of higher demand in that area. So next slide, slide 11, please. So this is a chart for the contract for June delivery 2022 Henry Hub. And you can just see over time how much it's increased here from May 2020 up through the current. Just this morning, I just looked, it was just slightly below $8, so it did decrease a little bit here since May 4th. But last time we came to you at the quarterly update on February 24th, this contract was trading $4.70 per MMBTU. Some of the reasons are just a whole lot of uncertainty around the Russian-Ukraine war. And some of the demand on liquid natural gas being exported out of the country and out of Mexico. And just to kind of give you some context of how much they're paying in the EU, European Union for the same contract is right around $32 per MMBTU. So quite a bit higher than here in the United States. Next contract. So that last chart on slide 11 was just a small fraction of the whole time period this contract has been trading. And the yellow rectangle in the lower right-hand corner just shows kind of that window that we showed in the last slide. If you go back to like right around 2006 and 2008, you see some peaks or spikes in the pricing that were close to $14 per MMBTU, and that's just kind of relative to what we're seeing right now, just under $8 per MMBTU. Natural gas, a lot of times, is kind of the deciding factor of the price of electricity. So as this contract had increased over time, the wholesale electricity prices also increased. So if we go to slide 13, we can just see how they've increased over time. On this chart, we have three different kind of snapshots in time of the forward price curve here at NYSE for flat forward power. And so the dashed gray line was at budget, which was not very long ago, just last November 1st. And then the solid black line is this most recent snapshot. The blue line was when we came to you back in February 2024. So just to kind of comparison, if we look on the left-hand segment of this graph for 2022, at budget, a flat product was $55.97 per megawatt hour. And if you look kind of at the top in the black, on April 7th, that same flat price was $64.06. Just recently on May 4th, that same price was $73 per megawatt hour. You can kind of see the shape or the spikiness throughout the year. And so definitely Q3, kind of that summertime, a lot of heat, a lot of demand in California. Q2, is quite a bit lower in all of the years, typically cooler and high runoff season, quite a bit of hydro. And then something to kind of notice over in the 2022, back on January 2022, so the very left-hand side of the chart, at budget time, which is the dashed gray line, kind of that January and February both started out pretty high and came in pretty low. So they were up close to $80 per megawatt hour. That actual kind of came in closer to $40 per megawatt hour. So, but then kind of out in August, September, the current price is quite a bit higher than it was at budget time. So lots of interesting things happening in the markets and prices. But we're going to kind of switch gears and go to Lakeland level webpage, which is slide 14. A lot of interesting things going on here, too, at the lake level. Back in November, December, we got a whole lot of precip. We can see that solid dark green line quite a bit above our normal operating range, which is the blue shaded section. And try to generate, we're able to generate really hard and bring that lake level down just to build some room in order for the runoff to fill. If you kind of take a look at May 1st, there is a small yellow diamond, and the green line came in just a hair below that diamond, which is May 1st target elevation. When we do planning and overlooking at planning, you can see that the blue range is actually a little bit below that too. And so we strive to be at or above that target 80% of the time and run the course of water years, excuse me, about 80 water years to make sure that we can meet that at least 80% of the time. But we've had such a cool April and May. So April has been about 6.5 degrees below normal Fahrenheit, and May 1st through the 13th has been about 4.5 degrees below normal. I was out yesterday quite a bit, and I thought, wow, this is it. It kind of feels more like March or February than May. So And just because of all that really cool weather, the runoff is really slow. So inflows into Lakeland are really low. And in order to try to refill, we have been curtailing generation. So back on April 24th, we went from generating 24 hours all full out all day long to just on peak only. So off-peak or 8 hours to overnight, turn both generators off just to conserve water and try to start that refill. Then on May 9th, we went to just a single unit running on those daytime hours. And then on May 13th, we have stopped generation on all hours, just trying not to draft the lake any further. Looking at a 10-day weather forecast, it looks like still 10 days of pretty cool weather, and it's going to take a little bit more heat to get that snowpack actually to start melting and running off. This, the Heaton River is running way below normal, and so I think just kind of looking into the crystal ball, what we can see right now is probably hug that right side of the blue shaded area up to June 1st. So I think with Memorial Day coming just a couple of weeks away, we might start getting some inquiries. How come the lake is a little bit low this year? And I think that just the real simple answer is the snowpack hasn't melted yet. And we still have about 25 feet of water or of lake water, kind of equivalent feet of lake fill in the mountain, and only just about 12 feet in the lake to fill. So twice as much water up in the mountain that we expect to come by the end of July, then room the lake to catch it. So I always hate to curtail generation at this point in time, just because we'll probably end up filling that water later. But we do have some of those operating objectives, which we kind of want to try to hit that June 1st target 80% of the time. And so a lot of opposing objectives this year, trying to kind of manage refill and end up not filling too much once that warm weather does come.
Janet, you have a question by Ann.
Okay, Ann.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Steve. So I'm looking at the graph, and so we are coming in just below the May target. So if we follow, and I think, Janet, I think what you guys are predicting is we're going to follow right along the bottom edge of the blue outline, which means at the bottom of the operating range. So what would you predict? Do you think we'll be close to the June 1 target? Hard to say.
So it is real hard to say at this point. And so, yeah, we have curtailed all generation. And so we have no outflow, basically, or small amounts of outflow on the lake right now. Just in order to try to keep filling the lake, if it remains really cool, I think that we'll come in slightly under the June 1st target. Now we could get quite a bit of inflow, and we could be 2 feet higher than that June 1st target too.
So I
think the orange, or it's kind of peach on my screen, but that peach color is our current year prediction. Kind of staying orange. Just because I've looked ahead at the 10-day weather forecast and see real cool temps, I think we're actually at a 90 percentile operating range. And so just because I've seen a 10-day weather forecast and just looked this morning, I think we're actually probably going to come in a little bit below that in the next 10 days.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So kind of just weather, weather dependent.
But the forecast for temperature through the summer for the next 3 months or 2 months is average temperature, correct?
We'll actually see that in a couple of slides. We'll see that in a couple of slides after this one.
Yeah, okay. All right. And Janet, one last thing. So a couple people have asked me, they heard somewhere the comment about, or maybe they saw it on the web on our web page or something, that we have 25 feet equivalency of water up in the mountains, snow up in the mountains, and 12 feet of space in the lake. And they kind of panicked and called me and said, "So what are we going to do? Are we going to overflow?" So I was just going to suggest that we because we are considerably below, because we are below or a little below normal, and because of that concern about that comment, I'm just wondering if we can't have a little extra, do a little extra outreach and get some communication out there as to what the situation is and why the lake's low. And
yeah, so definitely we have, I think Sean had sent out an email to the commissioners with some kind of message points, and so we can work with communications. Were you thinking like send a press release or just kind of keep refreshing the commission with those message points from week to week?
Well, whatever, you know, I'm certainly not the pro. Whatever our communications people think, but I think it's a little more than ever. More than normal outreach and letting people know what's going on would be really helpful.
So just explaining something like that where it says at 25 feet above
and 12 feet of room. Just maybe a little side note on the website saying that doesn't mean it's we're going to overflow. It just
breach the dam. Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. Do we still
And so with we do manage that with generation, so that we try to generate, and typically we can generate about three feet a month. It's kind of
how
a rule of thumb.
What's your
Feet a month.
Three feet a month.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I didn't know.
And
that.
Yeah, well, it kind of depends on inflow. You're not going to see it move that much, but that's how much outflow you would have at full gen. And then we are expecting some spill too. So, so in a way, to turn off generation is kind of tough too. We'll end up spilling that later, but we also want to hit the June 1st target. So a lot of often opposing operating objectives for the lake, and we have seven operating objectives. One is try to do whatever you can so you don't have high spill flows in the river, and aiming for those targets. So this year, with the cool spring, it's just not that much more challenging.
Yeah, no, I just want to say it's an amazing balancing act. I admire you guys. You always seem to hit the targets, or you're darn close to the targets. I don't know how you do it. I know it's an algorithm for sure. But thanks for that.
Thanks. Moving on to slide 15, kind of look at the water supply forecast. On the top, we have Grand Coulee, and you can see that the yellow highlighted January through July forecast is for 98% of normal. And at the bottom of the screen, we have the Lake Chelan water forecast for April through July, which is 95% of normal. Our own internal April final forecast was 90%. We probably have had a little bit higher than normal precip, and so we might be a little bit higher than our 90%. I think the 95% is a little bit strong at this point.
Hey, Janet, I'll jump in here with Commissioner Condon's question. I thought we had included, but I was confused with the other presentation we saw last week. But the temperature forecast we've seen from NOAA is from May through July is equal chance of above or below normal. So that would indicate about normal.
Right. And I think that was in the appendix that was sent out. So it was slide 20 on the appendix.
Right. I think Janet was also talking just the next 10 days is still cool, right, even though the next 3 months is normal.
Correct. Okay. And I'll turn it back to Sean for slide 16 and the market info.
Yes, so we wanted to bring the commissioner's attention to this. As we go out for contracting long-term assets, some of our chief competitors are solar, wind, and storage. And they've been pretty hit by especially solar by supply chain and commodities. And they've seen upwards of, close to 30% increases in their PPA prices. Also, this does not really include in detail the whole issue the solar is having with the tariff that they're trying to determine if people are in violation of the Chinese tariff. And there's even talk of that price being retroactive, those fees. So the pricing has been really hard for solars to even give their price, because even though the prices are up, they even have to give with an asterisk. So just something you should know as we go out and we do longer term contracting, we're in this a good position for hydro where the renewables that we compete against have some challenges with pricing and actually even giving them people a price and meeting commercial operating dates. So next slide, a little summary here. We wanted to So far, all the numbers look really good with this increase of pricing with the natural gas and the heat. And we'll see over the next 3 months. Last year, we thought pricing was going to be very robust, and you actually had a cooler summer down south. And so that ice curve, that mid-sea curve, actually flattened out as we got towards the summer. Also, the Western Resource Adequacy Program, when we come back, we'll know if we've filed with FERC, hopefully by that time, and if not, why. And then finally, the Western markets, we'll see what happens over the next 3 months with these proposals that are coming out and the inputs, the comments that come back from the straw proposal on EDAM, for example. And if there are any questions, we'll open it up.
I would just add briefly on the market discussion that currently the participation for us in a market would be voluntary. And we are seeing some states that are starting to require participation in an organized market. So one of the things our team is doing is really trying to stay proactive on all the market activity to position us well.
And the big threat there is that the mid-sea, if a lot of utilities joined, the biggest threat would be if the mid-sea dried up, right, where you're almost potentially forced to join the market. Hopefully that wouldn't happen right out of the gate, but it's something we are following, and we will take planning very seriously just in case we would have to join a market too. So there's multiple factors going on there.
All right. Any other questions? Sean and Janet, thank you very much for an informative presentation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Sean and Janet. Next item on the agenda is Confluence Parkway due diligence. We have this on the agenda each board meeting, and with us is Michelle Smith. And one of the things, Michelle's going to update us on some of the work she's been doing on updating the Q&A as well as the noise study. And one of the things it'd be great for the board to be thinking about as Michelle goes through this is just if there's any other things you'd like us to be focused on right now. We're focused more so on the noise study than anything, but be thinking about whether or not there's something else you'd like staff to be focused on. With that, Michelle.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. First, I want to do a sound check. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you fine, Michelle.
All right. Good. Thank you. So that was a great introduction. Thank you, Kirk. I'm going to jump right in here to the first, or actually it's the second slide in our presentation here. Again, this is to provide you today with some progress on our environmental due diligence associated with the Confluence Parkway project. There were some, in the last meeting, there were some additional questions. And so I wanted to follow up on those questions and let you know that these three in particular, it's a good segue to remind everybody about how far along this project is. Confluence Parkway is only at 5% design. So there's a lot of detail and a lot of information that hasn't been fine-tuned yet. So as we're trying to answer these questions for you, it may seem a little bit vague, but it's only because the details haven't been necessarily designed yet into the project design. And as this progresses over the next several months to final design, or at least 30% design by the end of the year is the hope, we might see a little more detail associated with some of this work. But jumping into the wildlife, there was a question, and it was a great question, how much more expert wildlife review should we ensure is occurring here for this project? And we've thought a lot about that, especially last fall as we started seeing some of the study results. And along with that, we asked the city if we could engage all of the resource agencies and the tribes in additional discussions about all of the impacts, including wildlife, so that their expertise, and I'm talking about, you know, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, NOAA Fisheries, WDFW, even the Forest Service and others, and the tribes. We've had conversations with the Yakima and the Colville, and we wanted to make sure that we weren't missing, the city actually in that NEPA process wasn't missing anything, and that there weren't surprises that might come later when they get their chance for review, which is a little bit later in the process. So I just wanted to let you know that that is occurring. It has occurred. We've had meetings now with all of those agencies. The Audubon Society has also been involved. And so we're getting some good feedback, and the city is implementing into the proposed mitigation. You know, they're looking at that feedback, and it's driving some of the detail that will be ironed out in the as the design furthers along. So the noise effects, as we're looking at those, last meeting I reminded you that we're not the only ones looking at noise. We're not the only ones looking at wildlife or the air quality or the visual impacts. We are, like we do in most of our environmental reviews, we're working in cooperation with all the agencies to make sure we're looking at this comprehensively. Same thing with the visual and air quality impacts. There were some great questions that came from the board last meeting about, you know, what, you know, how are they dealing with light from the vehicle traffic? How are we dealing with exhaust from the vehicles? And what I can tell you is that they are proposing to use vegetation buffers and the berms and the walls to not only mitigate for noise, but also a lot of the air quality and the visual impacts from lights as well. So we're continuing to wait for some of that detail so that we can actually see what those vegetation buffers look like, what kind of, trees and shrubs they're planning to use, where would those be located. But in terms of the air quality and the visual headlights, that's what they're proposing right now, are those vegetation buffers. And we just haven't seen the detail yet associated with how those will be implemented. So that was, I wanted to give you that update and see if there was any further question related to those three areas that I can help answer.
Commissioners, anything else for Michelle?
Okay, feel free to send me an email, or if you think of it later, let me know. I'm going to go ahead and jump to the next.
Michelle, we've got one question. Gary?
Okay, all right.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Michelle. Michelle, I'm not sure if it's on the in the same category as the three items on the last slide or not, but one of the questions that was asked early on and was answered simply, I think, with a you know, we follow the highway administration's recommendations, but it had to do with the chemicals that are used to melt snow or to prevent snow, you know, ice from building up and that sort of thing. I recently took a drive over Blewett Pass and noticed so many trees that were along the edge of the highway that were brown. And I don't know if it's from the ice melt used. There are certainly those people that suggest that it is. And so I think since it is a somewhat sensitive area, maybe just have asked the question of someone, do the chemicals used to control snow and ice have any impact? And, would it, as it drains into the wetland, will it have any impact?
Commissioner Arsenault, thank you. I think that's a great point. And I made a note of that. I know that's mentioned. I remember seeing that in I think it was the ecosystems report, something about the chemical uses and things like that. So I know that's been brought up in the past. I can't tell you right now how they, you know, what they plan to use or what kind of chemicals or which ones are adverse, you know, would adversely affect the area. I do know they have to follow certain DOT and federal highway policies in terms of some of that stuff. But I will write a note of that and make sure that as we're progressing that we pay attention to that one specifically. So I appreciate that point.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to the noise evaluation, we've made some great progress. We've now met with and hired Jacobs Engineering Group. They are going to provide the technical professional services for the noise review and the noise study. We really appreciated their full suite of expertise. They have not only expertise with environmental compliance and permitting, but they've also have expertise in Section 4F under working under the Federal Highway 4F reviews. They also have a lot of work and experience working with licensees in the FERC arena. So we felt that they had the right team, if you will, that can help us look at all of the different angles of this. We're finishing up. I think we'll be signing the contract this week and getting started on that work. We've gone through the scope of work with them, which I included again on the fourth slide. So they're aware of what we're trying to accomplish. And the timeline that we think we can get all of this done is the end of June. So we're going to work pretty quickly, but over the next 3 to 4 weeks to get that review completed. And then what we're hoping is to come back to the board either the first or second meeting in July with our final report. And so that's kind of the big picture schedule. We do have a tentative site visit scheduled pending. I know that a couple of the board members might want to attend, so I'm going to toss out this day and you can get back to me and let me know if it works. And if not, we'll reschedule because I would like to give you that opportunity to be there. But May 26th, which is next week from Thursday, it'll likely be in the morning. We haven't selected the time yet. But May 26th is our tentative date for the first site visit, and that will be with the contractor and the PUD staff. I'm kind of throwing that out to see if anyone would like to attend and if that date works, and if not, we're happy to reschedule. So that's our update on the noise study.
That date works for me. I don't know who else would like to attend. Ann? You're on mute, Ann.
I'm just looking on my calendar. May 26th, Michelle, is that right?
Yes, a week from Thursday.
And that would be with the contractor and the staff.
That's right.
Great. I'd be interested in attending as well.
And Gary?
Thank you, Steve. So, question, Steve, if we have more than two commissioners, then do we have to list it as a meeting? And if so, would you prefer keeping it just to two commissioners?
I'm going to defer that to Eric. We would have to advertise, and what would be the pluses and minuses in doing that?
Don't think there's a plus or minus at all, Commissioner. It's just some time spent to do that if you're not going to have a quorum. But if you have a quorum, it's certainly necessary, and we can certainly accomplish that in the timelines provided if the commissioners. So what I would not want is to have one where a commissioner who is interested could not attend simply because of the process. We can accommodate the process and the desires of the team.
I think Justin is here, too, in the boardroom, if you'd like to add to that.
Thank you, Kirk. I was just going to also suggest that we may be able to have multiple sessions with the consultant group on the same day so we could accommodate two groups of two, for instance.
That's a good idea. I think we can do that. Is a good possibility. So if that works better, we can certainly work on that schedule.
Well, if it's not too much work to put staff through, I certainly would like to attend if I could.
Okay.
Yeah, so commissioners, I think we just leave it to you. It's not inconvenient to note a meeting. Whatever you prefer, if you don't mind the separate sessions, you can avoid some of that. If you want to all hear the same comments at the same time and provide the same feedback, then we can do it with the public. It's up to you.
So, commissioners, if you're anyone else that's interested, and we'll also let Randy know because he is not here today, we'll get back. Kirk, so we can do this as a to-do follow-up, find out who's going to go, and then arrange it accordingly.
Yeah.
Fair enough?
Yep.
Good.
And we would want to do that this afternoon so that we could notice it.
When's the meeting again? We need
May 26th.
Yeah, so we need 24 hours.
Yeah.
So we can, we have a little bit of time, but wouldn't want to wait just to accommodate, okay. But sure.
I will not be attending if that helps.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. Thank you, and I'll wait for your feedback on that. Thank you so much.
All right. Anything else, Michelle?
That was the end of the presentation. I'm happy if there's any other questions. I'm happy to answer anything further. But I think we're moving right along. So I look forward to the site visit and working on this particular study.
Okay. Anne, you have your hand up?
I do. Thank you. I just want to say I can be flexible on Thursday. I can go by myself. I can go with somebody else. You two guys choose what you want, and I'll work in there. I can be flexible. And I want to tell Michelle, thank you so much for terrific follow-up.
Yep.
Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy to do it.
Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Thank you, Michelle.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Kirk, on to number 7.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Justin. Agenda item number 7 is Rate Schedule 36 Transition Agreement. You might recall from prior discussions, we had a discussion about whether or not to go to the staff recommendation 2B, option 2B, or potentially consideration of a one-year transition. We have prepared a resolution for this afternoon for option 2B. And but we also wanted to, because it was a good discussion, wanted to have some time this morning just to understand whether the board would like us to plan for something else in the afternoon. I will just reiterate the staff recommendation is option 2B. Consider that to be a good balance between the significant increase in the energy charges we saw and also the current level of cryptocurrency load in the county, as well as considering this is new for Chelan PUD and the customers. And one of the things that I will say that I will commit to is us as staff evaluating the rate schedule 36 between now and the next time the rate would be scheduled to be adjusted, which would be April, and how the rate works is you might recall that an index is used in December to identify what the energy charge component of the rate is, and then that gets scheduled to be adjusted in April. So I think regardless of what we choose here, we've certainly learned enough that we'd like to take some time, regardless of the transition that's decided upon, to review that rate methodology and how that rate works accordingly, both for the district and the customers. So with that, just I'll turn it over to the board, but I will commit to doing that between now and the next rate adjustment, and we'll go from there.
Commissioners, Eric, if I might just for a moment or two say I've got on the screen this the short summary of the different transition options that we've been talking about here over the past several months. The resolution that does accompany the package, as Kirk mentioned, is still the 2B option, so the same effectively as last time. I'm going to say we, but I really mean Charles and Lindsay have already prepared all of the alternatives for language resolution for any or all of these options if the board chooses to go a different direction than that. And then my last final reminder would be just that in the event we did not take action today or the board chooses to take some time to further consider, we do have the 1st of June effective date coming up for the transition. So I have, let me see if I can, I'm certain that I can't. We also have a motion prepared if the board believes that is of value to them, which would continue to defer that annual adjustment for another month. So with that, I'd just say that as requested at the last board meeting, we did provide to all of the commissioners some, not all, but some of the important resources that have been constantly coming back over the past several months. Those two include the, I'm going to say, the primary PowerPoint presentation that we've been utilizing to facilitate the conversation, the resolution adopting Rate 26, which has two important components as some subjoined attachments to that. The first is the rate itself as an Exhibit A, and then a pretty lengthy staff report attached to Exhibit B to that resolution. So that's where we're at today, and if there's any other questions of the board, we're happy to try to answer those. Otherwise, Commissioner McKenna, I will hand it back to you for board discussion.
Great. And thanks, Eric. And again, Commissioners, what we're trying to do is to have some discussion this morning as to preparing for this afternoon on what direction you'd like to go, whether want to make a decision or whether we want to defer, wait till Randy is here to participate, but to have some dialogue this morning on the continuing the dialogue on different options, hear from the public as well. The one thing that has struck me, as typical, I usually see points of view from various perspectives, which creates a lot of gray for me. But the one thing that seemed to make sense that was kind of some new thinking for me is we've focused on comments and implications and consequences for customers, but I've also looked at more about the positive and negative consequences for our policy implementation for the PUD. And I think what Kurt just stressed a minute ago is really important, that, and I'm just going to throw this out as an example, rather than spread this out over 3 years, which has could have negative implications for the PUD, I think setting the stage for the 2B, the two-year transition, with the continuous discussion and study on implications of the policy might be an effective way to go. I think that added component of continued learning and discussion is important to throw in there, and not just giving the perception that we've decided on the transition and that's the last thing that we're going to do. So commissioners, I think just having some discussion on how would you like to proceed this afternoon. Would you like to go ahead and move forward with some recommendations or motions on 1 or 2 or 3 years, or do you want to wait till Randy is here for further discussion, which means we need to take action this afternoon to postpone a month, which I don't believe there's any negative on that. So, Ann, you have your hand raised.
I do. Thank you, Steve. I think we all talked to Randy. Randy could not be here today. And I really think Randy would like to be present and vote. This is very important to It's very important to all of us, to the district, to Malachi, and Randy really asked to be present, so I think that's what we should do. We should postpone this as long as it doesn't create a hardship for anybody, and it sounds like it doesn't.
Dennis?
Yeah, I before we consider what we're going to do this afternoon, I think we need to complete the discussion this morning. I agree with Ann that after a conversation with Randy, I believe it would be appropriate to table definitely consideration until he is available, and I believe that would be at our next regular scheduled meeting. A couple weeks away, or is it about three away with, well, it's about two away, isn't it?
I think it's three.
So those are my two concerns. I'm not sure we're finished with discussion now. I think we may need a little bit more time. I know I do. I have a couple questions.
Ann?
Sorry. It is 3 weeks away, if that's an issue, correct?
That it is. That's correct. 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
And just along those lines.
Is there a negative impact to that?
As long as the action is taken to defer the additional, to defer the rate increase that was scheduled to go in June 1st, we can make that work.
Right, commissioners. Yeah. And that's actually prepared. So it's on your screen, just so you're not pressured by the timing of that. There's plenty of, we've done quite a bit of work to provide, I'll say, flexibility. So feel free to do what you think is right instead of what might be perceived as the expeditious thing.
Okay. Maybe at this time, do we have any public comment? To the commissioners?
Well, I'd like to finish my question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis, go ahead.
Let me understand a little bit more fully if we may. If we went to three, tell me about the negative impact on the PUD.
Is that the three-year transition?
Yes, please.
The second, I know this up, but that's helpful.
Yeah.
So that's not the revenue implications. I have that too, though. If you want that up, would you prefer the other one, the PDF?
Sorry, bear with us. We're trying to pull up some
information
that was presented at other presentations.
We've got the right resources in the room. You're just way out on a ledge with me running things here.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Lindsay Mons. While Eric's pulling up that presentation, the quick answer really is it's just a difference in the revenue that the district is foregoing in the three-year conversion versus the two-year. Each additional year, as it gives the customer a benefit of the lower rate, the district just has a revenue loss associated with those compared to if it were charging the full Schedule 36.
That's in this middle one.
What are those amounts?
May be easier, actually, in that presentation that you had up before from March.
You think
there's a slide in there.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of numbers on this screen.
We'll pull up the March
presentation. I knew you were going to do that to me. So you got to give me just 1 second, commissioners. I copied... in order to avoid going to the wrong slides, only the two I thought I would need, and here we are in the next one, although I'm close. It's the March one, right?
Yes.
All right, we're getting there.
I can feel it.
Yeah, can you?
Anticipation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, these are those impactful moments in the jury trial. I just let you sit and think. All right, I have it up. Thanks, Lindsay. Which one is it that you're looking for?
Scroll down there.
You might be page 8.
There you go.
This one, Lynn? Yes?
Yep. Very, very small on the screen, however.
Well, you can blow that screen up too.
There probably. So, Commissioners, if you'll recall, the March presentation was limited to a single one-year, a single two-year, and then two options on the three-year. Following that meeting, we added in all of the additional A and B options. But this will give you kind of a general idea since we're talking about an option two versus, or a two-year option versus a three-year option. In the two-year option, which is the one shown here, is the 2B option, which is a third transition each year to Schedule 36. So depending on what markets do, of course, with the current market rate that we have right now, there would be a cost to the district of about $3.2 million on a two-year transition, and that would increase in the two three-year transition options. If we go to a one-quarter each year, that would increase by about $1.5 million to $4.8 million. And then if it was the other...
Just a little bit, Lindsay, I'm trying to write it down and I missed it. So the two-year transition is how much?
It's about $3.2 million.
3.2, okay, thanks. Three-year?
The three-year option, so the 1A option is about $6.4 million. And 1B, okay. 1B is approximately $4.8 million? Yes.
So 1B is, okay, I'm getting confused between 1B and 3A and 3-year and 2-year. Maybe I'm just simple. But
we did that on purpose.
So can we just call them 3-year, 2-year, and 1-year transitions for now?
Sure, yep.
I'm a history major in psych, okay? Numbers, you got to help me.
So a 3-year transition, where the rate goes to Schedule 35 the first year, and then 1/3 each year is the $6.4 million.
6.4, okay. 2-year is then 3.2?
Yes.
And 1-year is 1.6?
Yes.
I am feeling so much better about the numbers. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the Commissioner Bowles, if you see on your screen, the second three-year option is off to the right. That far right column is really the three-year impact. Do you see those? So the top 6.4 is your 3A transition. That's the rate 35 for a year, and then third ticks each year. Full 36 rate at the beginning of the fourth year. The second the second column is also a three-year transition, but rather than a stay at 35 for a year, it's a one-quarter transition in each of the first 3 years, and then the final one-quarter puts them at the full 36 at the beginning of the fourth year.
Okay, thanks.
And that's the six. That's the 4.8 $2 million dollar impact that you see.
Okay. All right. That's helpful.
So before I swing back around to my fellow commissioners for some direction, do we have any public comment on this? Malachi?
Good morning, commissioners. Thanks for the opportunity to speak and all the very thorough consideration process. I appreciate it. Thinking about what Kirk said earlier, the commitment to Schedule 36 between now and next year's market rate adjustment. If it's helpful in light of that, what would be best for our company group would be if 2 year ends up being the direction that the commissioners settle on, I would request 2A versus 2B. And the reason for that change in request is, one, that sounds like the 2 year duration of transition sounds like the direction the commissioners are leaning. And second, and importantly, the district's committed to reviewing rate schedule 36 within the next year, then I believe it's actually going to happen. That makes years 2 and 3 less critical, if that makes sense. So I'm very focused on the next year in particular. So to reiterate, in light of all that I've heard before and during this meeting, we would request 2A versus 2B on the 2 year options. And then while I still have the floor, I just have one question on the draft transition agreement. I see in Section 3, Item B, that only the customers that have an operating load that has been operating continuously since July 18 of 2016 qualify. I'm curious, and maybe this is a question for staff. I think Salcedo Enterprises are the only loads that actually qualify under that of confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so commissioners, to wrap this up.
Hold on.
Okay, Ann?
Do we have an answer for Malachi from staff, or is that something, are you going to get back to him with that answer?
So, Commissioner, my perspective, this is Eric, is that we'll get back to him. I don't have that in front of me, and I'm loath to pull it up managing all the various, you can already see I'm beyond my capacity here with the management of documents for you on screen. So, the intent, though, was that it would apply to the 35, existing contract 35 customers. So, there's not an intent to exclude any of the existing transition customers, to my knowledge. So, that's my off-the-cuff response, but certainly if there are other issues, we will review those with Malachi. So, and the other customers. It's I think that the intent is pretty clear that it's to transition all properly authorized 35 customers who are on that transition agreement to this transition agreement. So.
Okay. So, Eric, I appreciate you looking into that and getting an answer for us. So commissioners, at this time, I'm just going to try to summarize what I've heard. I've heard from two of you that you would like to postpone this out a month with resolution this afternoon in order to give our other commissioner the opportunity for input and participate in further discussion. And I just am going to check in with Gary. Gary, are you comfortable giving that direction for staff this afternoon?
Thank you, Steve. Yes, I am. I'm prepared to move forward, but in light of the fact that Randy is not here to make his thoughts be known, pushing it off would be just fine.
Okay. So, Kirk, that'll be the direction. Kirk and Eric, that'll be the direction for this afternoon.
Got it. We'll have the proposed motion deferring the energy charge rate increase this afternoon.
All right.
Thank you.
At this point, item 8 on our agenda is public comment. Do we have any requests for public comment? Anything else? Okay, we have a little less than a half an hour, Kirk. Are you prepared to go ahead and move in or how would you like to proceed?
I do have four manager items, and I am prepared to move into at least three of those if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. First couple of them, we've got John Stoll in the boardroom with us for.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Lisa's just bringing up one slide we wanted to put on the screen.
While she's doing that, I can go ahead and skip to the one I had, which was just a reminder for the board. We are preparing and planning for resuming in-person board meetings as of the second board meeting in June, which let me make sure I've got the date right. It would be scheduled on June 20th, so we'll be prepared to transition accordingly, and just let me know if there's any desire to change that date, and we can adjust accordingly.
Thanks, Kurt.
Yep. And we would, along with that, still make the ability for commissioners that weren't able to attend in person to call in or use Microsoft Teams as well.
So this is really a function of advertising to our public that we'll be moving into our public meetings. And while we're on that, and this next, commissioners, are you okay with that date? Anybody have any questions?
Okay. From the virtual participant.
Okay. Gary and Ann, any concerns or questions on that?
Yeah. No.
I can do it.
I don't have any. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ann.
Yeah, I won't be at that meeting. That is actually my birthday, and I am going to be long gone. So I can't even call in the meeting. So whatever you guys is works for me.
Thank you. Gary?
I see that as June 20, and I have no problem with in-person meetings. That would work just fine.
Okay.
Yeah, commissioners, this is Eric. Can I just say it really is a result of the fact that the emergency order signed by the governor will expire then, so it will – excuse me, it will allow us to get back to what I really think of more business as usual pre-COVID pandemic. So it will be more restrictive on, I'm going to say, public remote participation with a strong preference to in-person attendance. But our governance policies, of course, always allow commissioners to attend remotely and to vote remotely. And then we have always, where there's a special need, allowed visitors, presenters, members of the public to participate remotely. We've not always made arrangements for video, so we will, have to decide whether that's something the board will want to continue to allow for, or we would push to telephone, and then how strong that preference is in terms of how we've given out the call-in information with a move back to primarily in-person, it has the opportunity to relieve staff and struggling, technology-challenged attorneys in terms of what they're required to do with the online presentation. So, but I just want to make it clear that it is really more of a return to pre-pandemic operations. And And that will have the only real impact for commissioners. There's not really an impact other than we'd welcome you here in person. But for the public, it will preference in-person participation as it did before the pandemic.
Okay. And then just ask for staff to kick that around on phone versus video and discuss that and get, you know, make those recommendations to us. So we'll plan on that. Very good. Okay, John.
Returning to the date of June 20th, Commissioner Congdon and I graduated from high school the same year. So I know exactly what birthday it is, and I am committed to silence.
All right. Well, we'll just hope that's a great birthday party. All right. John, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. Again, John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. Normally, I'd have Katie Marshall, who's our project manager of AMI, give this update, but we've got a lot of things going on as we're gearing up this project. So I want to just give you a heads up and let you know that the good progress has been made. And what you see on screen is a picture of actually the first infrastructure actually going out in the field. That's what they call an access point. We'll have, when the project is done, about 25 of those throughout our service territory. And what that does, the reeds that are coming through the mesh network, the ITRON, they reach those, and then that actually is tied into our fiber optic system. So then that brings all that information back to the head end and ultimately to the district to use that information. So this is pretty key because it's really launches what are, we're calling our beta phase, where over the next probably 6 weeks to 2 months, 500 meters will be deployed primarily around the Monitor, Cashmere, and Old Station area. So the beta test is what it is. It's an opportunity to really get our hands on this equipment, do the installs. We'll learn quite a bit from that, but ultimately this is gearing up towards a late fall to then begin the mass deployment for the roughly 50,000 meters throughout our district. So anyhow, it's a great step that we're finally out there. The customers who will be impacted, those 500, they will get postcards, and there's been information already through the newsletter. But as it gets closer to their install date, there's more specific information that they will receive. Neil in communications and his team has been a big help supporting that. And again, just wanted to let you know that's the next phase of this project. And if you have any questions, one thing I would like to add, you know, we will learn some things through this. We'll be touching every meter, and as part of that, we'll probably have some access issues that we'll have to work through with customers. We realize even though this will be primarily built by contractors installing the meters, we do see the need to have a lot of operational support. As such, we've kind of pivoted some resources to be ready and out there in the field to support this project. With that, I'll just open it up if you have any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for John? Dennis.
Yeah, John, just looking at the installation and what it looks like, there is a continued push to be involved with 5G, and they also require or request at least the primary point on a pole. Do we have any information related to 5G and potential interference with an AMI system sharing basically similar space or same space?
Yeah, that's a great question, Commissioner Bowles. From a frequency standpoint, they operate differently as far as I understand, but when it comes to maybe the physical space, we have an application process. So anybody, including our own infrastructure, we go through a process to model everything and do what we need to do to ensure it follows the National Electric Safety Code and things of those nature. So we do have a process to ensure that we work through that.
is there a consideration of our customers first in that process?
As far as?
Competing for space on a pole.
Well, you know, again, we will model it, and right now, again, we've done that with the AMI infrastructures. We've ran it through. Any other customer or any third-party attacher, you know, they would go through that as well.
Okay. So they would come in behind us with a request. If occupied, it's a done deal.
Right. You know, and what we've seen, too, commissioners, you know, we get these requests all the time, and you know, folks have options. They may be able to go to a different pole or a different access point as well. So they tend to be pretty flexible.
John, thank you.
You're welcome.
Ann?
Thank you. John, I have a random question. I've noticed something when I'm riding my bike on the Manson Highway. I look up at the I think it's on the communication cables. It's on the lower ones. There's a triangular shaped metal piece that hangs on the wire. It comes out in a triangle on each side, and it's kind of fluted. I'm curious what that's for.
And I love pictures. If you could take a picture of that sometime, I could probably answer that. You know, if something jumps to mind, it almost sounds like some of the storage we may put up for our fiber optic cable. They call it loop storage, and there's some aluminum racks.
It doesn't look like that. I'll get you a picture. We thought it might have something to do with snow load, with shedding snow.
Okay, it could be an animal guard of some type.
Because we might be that too, yeah.
You know, there are spots where we put that up.
Yep, I'll take a photo. Thank you.
All right, any other questions for John? John, thank you very much.
All right, I have one more. This being brief, I just wanted, again, to let the board know that we're implementing the third year of the board-approved rate increases back in 2020. These were developed as part of the strategic plan to put in a 3% electric rate, a 4% water and wastewater rate, and then on the fiber optic system, a 3% wholesale. These were intended to just be kind of inflation-based, just as prudent steps to put our rates in a position. So as we've heard from customers, we don't find ourselves in a position where we have to do large single-digit or even double-digit rate increases. So those go into effect June 1st. And Commissioner Bowles, I know you always have the comment that people don't pay percentages, they pay dollars. And just on the residential side, that'll be $1.75 a month, and that will be applied to the base charge. The other rates are pretty much spread across the different elements of the rate. But for residential, it's $1.75.
You're absolutely golden today, Mr. Stroll.
You've taught me well.
I'm surprised anybody was listening. Thank you.
We're all listening, Dennis. All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Kirk, we're back to you.
Okay. I do have back the fourth of four items. Aline Underwood just joined us to give us an update on open house coming up.
Hey there. Good afternoon, or I guess it's still morning, commissioners. Aline Underwood, Fish and Wildlife Manager. Wanted to give you a quick update on the open house. You may have seen the email come out from our communications department, but we are planning a public open house walk-in session on May 19th from 4 to 7 at the Leavenworth Fire Station to ask folks about their perspectives and how they use Tumwater Dam. We will also be having a survey. It's 7 questions. There's a couple questions after that are purely demographic sort of collection questions. A 7-question survey will also be available from May 18th to the 27th. So the open house is going to be really informal. We'll have several boards that our communication and graphics folks have put together. They look really great. They've got the background, what tumwater's for, how it's used today, the fish that encounter tumwater, We will also have a couple of our partners there. We'll have the Yakima Nation will be there with a board to discuss their COHO program that they have at Tumwater that's really important to them. Grant PUD will also be there participating. They won't have a board, but they'll be available for any questions that come from the public regarding their use of the facility for their programs. So, again, this is a culmination of discussions we had last year about the maintenance project that's going to occur either later this year or presumably next year to Tumwater Dam, and our desire to better understand how our custom owners use that facility and the improvements we're going to make potentially into the future for that facility.
Great. Thank you, Arlene. And again, that open house is at the Fire Hall this Thursday from 4 to 7. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I believe, if I have this correct as well, Randy and I will be attending that. Commissioners, was there any other interest in that for public notification purposes, or are we still on with Randy and I participating? Gary?
Personally, I'm good with that. If there's some opportunity for perhaps a summary or feedback on the input that you would receive at that meeting, that would be very helpful.
I'm sure we'll be following up at a subsequent meeting with Arlene giving everyone an update on that.
Yes, that's the purpose of the questionnaire. So any feedback that we receive at the meeting, also the online questionnaire that will run for a few days, we'll make sure to summarize that and report back to the board.
Great. All right. Thank you very much, Arlene.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. And that's the end of manager items.
Okay. Let's see. Maybe we should go ahead and move into, we want to get a couple of commission, do we have any commission items we want to get out of the way?
Are there any?
I'm not aware of any. Gary.
Please bear with me one second while I get my calendar open. Just want to share with my fellow commissioners that the NWU PPA annual conference, which will be held in Coeur d'Alene, will kick off on the 23rd, which would be a week from today. I will be in attendance, and I believe Commissioner Congdon will also be in attendance at that conference.
Very good. Lisa, do we have anything that you need to go over on commission travel?
Not unless you have any questions for me that I can take care of.
Okay. All right. I think we'll be we'll take a lunch break at this point. Is there anything that I'm missing?
I don't see anything on our end. It looks like Commissioner Arsenault has a question.
Gary?
We have about 6 minutes left. Do we have enough time to talk about delegation items?
Certainly. Kirk, do you want to do that now? Or?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about delegations from prior meetings, unless Commissioner yes. Arsenault would have anything else that he'd like to discuss. Nope. Okay. From prior meetings, we had Michelle had a item to share the City of Wenatchee's environmental study on exhaust fumes for Confluence Parkway, which she sent via email on May 10th. Eric had one to provide staff report for rate schedule 36, which he discussed earlier this morning, and transition impacts, which he sent via email as well on May 4. and Rebecca was going to check on facilities regarding the WPUDA meeting in July, and she did look into options and found CTC as an available option, sent an email on May 5th for that.
Right. And Gary, it looks like most of our meetings for WPUDA are going to be down at the convention center, so from what I understand. All right. Is that it, Kirk?
That's it for the prior meetings, and if you want to go through the ones I have thus far today, I can
certainly
do that.
We can do that.
I did capture a request to do some public outreach on the Lake Chelan lake levels, given the unusual year, to do more there on the public education side. And then on Confluence Parkway, to look into the chemicals used for de-icer and potential impacts to the vegetation and wetlands. And then on the rate Schedule 36 discussion, the commitment to review the Schedule 36 methodology between now and the next energy charge adjustment.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Well, at this time, we will recess for lunch. We'll come back at 1 p.m.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the May 16th, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices you have with you today. Mute your screens. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are being recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us, including items 15 and 16. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Mr. President, I would make such a motion to accept the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion?
Dennis.
All those in favor of the consent agenda signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Kirk, I'll turn this over to you to present the regular agenda resolutions 14, 17, 18, 19, and 20.
Great.
And should we just we'll vote at the end of those, or do you recommend voting individually on those?
I recommend separate consideration for item number 19.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead and move forward then.
Great, thank you. Agenda item number 14 is a resolution amending rate schedule 15, the direct current fast charging electric vehicle charging infrastructure rate as adopted via resolution number 22-14624. And with us today presenting is Jim White.
So this resolution is really just a clarification of the earlier motion that was passed. The rate schedule has been passed, but we added some changes to it to limit to 5 megawatts and cleaned up a couple of typos and some other things to clarify it. So it's the rate itself is scheduled to go into effect June 1st. That's primarily, it's just procedural mainly.
I think just to add, the other piece of this one is the put the limit at 5 megawatts, and there would be a contract above that. But also, I think it's pertinent to make sure you all know that part of this is also waiving the hearing requirements for the rate accordingly, just simply because this isn't affecting any current customers.
Okay.
Commissioners, any questions? All right. We can go ahead and move on to item 17.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Agenda item 17 is a resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to services agreement SATA number 21-11370 with Greenworks PC and further authorizing amendment number 1 to the interlocal agreement number 21-11625 with the City of Wenatchee for riverfront park enhancements. And with us is Justin Erickson.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director for District Services. I'm going to start with just a little bit of background before I jump into the details of the resolution. As you might recall, after an extensive community planning effort, the Riverfront Park Development Plan was approved by this board on December 6, 2021, and the Wenatchee City Council on January 13th of 2022. Riverfront Park includes approximately 31 acres, and a majority of the land is owned by the City of Wenatchee and has been leased to Chelan PUD since 1983 to support park development as part of our responsibilities under our license for Rock Island. The City of Wenatchee and Chelan PUD have each committed $2 million to support enhancements at Riverfront Park. Remaining funds after the 2021 master planning effort are approximately $3.68 million, and initial construction of the first phase could start as soon as 2023. District funding is provided by board allocations from the Public Power Benefit Program that were made in two separate groupings. So this resolution before you today does two things. One, it authorizes amendment to the service agreement with Greenworks. Greenworks is the landscape architecture firm that prepared the master plan, and we do propose that we would utilize them for this next effort as well. This amendment would add funds to cover the design and engineering costs as we get to 100% design development and ultimately go out for bid in 2023. This task authorization and this process will also allow for better cost estimation, the opportunity to sort of right-size the effort given some of the challenging bidding conditions that we have. And it will allow us to have more engagement with the community, not just the city and the district, but the general public on some of the key design elements that I know are important to you as well, such as the splash pad, the riverfront railway improvements, and other components of that first phase. Part two of the resolution authorizes amendment number 1 to the interlocal agreement with the City of Wenatchee. And really this just solidifies the matching funds that were allocated through the PPP process that you're familiar with. And so as we looked at that agreement, we recognized that it was it predated that and just needed to be updated to reflect this next effort of work along with those allocations. So before I open it up to questions, I just wanted to give a special thanks to the City of Wenatchee for their collaboration and support with this project. I also wanted to recognize the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. Although they are not part of these agreements, they have provided funding through a EPA grant that they received to do environmental assessment and geotechnical review of the old landfill that occupies a large portion of the Riverfront Park area. And so this support by the port is allowing will allow us and the city to stretch our dollars even further as we proceed. Be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Commissioners, any questions? All right. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Resolution 18.
Yep. Agenda item 18 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the East Bank Hatchery Pump Station Rehabilitation bid number 21-06 and authorizing the East Bank Hatchery Pump Station Rehabilitation be obtained by negotiation. Before I let David speak to this one, David also has agenda item number 20, which will consecutively. I just wanted to add that you've probably picked up on the pattern of us having a lot of these in consecutive board meetings, rejection of bids, some in part due to non-responsive bids, material exceptions, but also due to the fact that they've been over the 15% of the engineer's estimate. And given the current bidding environment, I do want to just add that we are taking a look at each one of these that are coming up where we're seeing these higher prices and determining whether or not we really need to go forward with it at this particular time or if it's something we can defer. Both 18 and 20 are items that we looked at from that standpoint. And I'll let David Lodge share both of those. David?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. David Lodge, Project Management Manager. So as Kirk mentioned, sending a resolution on the East Bank Pump Station Rehabilitation Project. And this is a complicated rehab project with new electrical controls, pumps, and motors. But the primary objective of this project is to mitigate an operational safety concern, which is why we are recommending that this project move forward. On May 4th, we opened bids and received two bids, the low bid of $1,532,000, which exceeded our engineer's estimate of $1.2 million. So we are recommending that we reject all bids, declare no bids, and negotiate a contract to perform this work. As part of that negotiation, we will explore value engineering options with the proposers, but we do feel that we have exhausted most of the value engineering solution as part of design. So in order to enter into this contract, we also need to revise the budget. So as part of this resolution, we're proposing to add $750,000 to the capital budget for a revised budget of $2,159,000. Any questions?
And that's the revised budget would be $2,995,000, correct? Is that what you just said, David?
I have $2,159,000.
And that's resolution 18.
18, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Should I have David go to agenda item number 20?
Yes.
Okay.
For some reason, okay. I thought we were into 20, and I was just trying to clarify that and look at my numbers. And
they are very similar.
Yeah, they are similar.
Go ahead and let's do 20, and then we'll address both of them.
Okay, great. 20 is a motion to revise the capital budget for the backup control center project. So on this project, we opened bids on February 16th. And we received a single bid that exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. On March 7th, we presented a resolution to reject all bids and negotiate. And we have concluded those negotiations and have selected Homely Builders as a preferred contractor. But in order to enter into a contract, we are requesting to increase the capital budget by $992,484 for a revised budget of $2,995,000. And this project is a critical predecessor in moving out of headquarters and relocating to the service center. Any questions on this motion?
All right. Commissioners, any questions? So do I have a motion, Commissioners, for resolution number 14, 17, 18, and 20?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept items 14, 17, 18, and 20 as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Kirk, item number 19.
Okay, thanks, David.
Item
number 19, as a result of the discussion this morning, we have prepared a draft motion for your consideration, simply to defer the energy charge adjustment that was slated to go into effect June 1 to July 1, allowing us more time for discussion on an appropriate transition period for moving customers from rate schedule 35 to 36. Okay. And you have it there on your screen, should you choose to act on it.
Commissioners, do I have a motion?
Mr. President. Go ahead, Ann. Go ahead, Ann.
No, you go.
Mr. President, I would like to make a motion to move to defer the annual adjustment of the rate schedule 36 market energy charge to July 1, 2020, in order to allow time for resolution of customer requests regarding rate 36 without compounding the interim impact to customers.
And Gary, let's review the date, July 1, 2022. I think you said 2020.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did. I'm sorry. Yes, July 1, 2022.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Against? Motion passes. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Okay. we've concluded manager items, correct, Kirk? Anything else to add on your end?
No, just wanted to point out that we did include lessons learned on the consent agenda items in your packet there. But right. Other than that, we did have manager items concluded in the morning.
Okay. Commissioners, anything else on commission items? We've done follow-up on delegation of items, action items, delegation of action items. Do we have any additional public comment at this time? Are there any matters of general business as may be necessary to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we will be moving into executive session. I lost that. Hang on a second. Oh, there we go. we'll be moving into executive discussion to discuss legal counsel, agency enforcement action, litigation, potential litigations to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. And we'll be doing that for 90 minutes, Kirk.
That's my estimate, correct.
Okay. Commissioners, are we okay to move right into that, or do we need a five-minute break? And we're okay to move into it? Okay. So we'll be signing off and moving into executive session. We'll be recessed for 90 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's Monday, May 16th, 2022. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned. Bye,
Thank
everybody.
You. Thank Bye. You, commissioners. Thanks.